So Tim, can you walk us through a revised limitations provision in light of those distinctions?
Sure. And this is, in all of these examples, these are just some practical examples that we thought would be helpful. There's obviously 1,000 ways you could draft all of these provisions. So here we've actually marked up the prior one. So we've carved out obligations to pay. We've limited it to the lesser of two things. This is more pro-supplier than pro-customer. The lesser of a dollar amount or the amount paid. Suppliers like this model, obviously, because you buy a big thing once and you never buy anything else, and the limitations on direct damages go down. Customers are going to want it to be the greater of at a minimum on those two things. And then in particular, based on what Natalie was just talking about, we made the disclaimer of indirect damage or consequential damages more clear. We added exemplary and punitives. We specifically added lost profits and also others like loss of revenue, loss of data, loss of use. So we've made it much more clear as to what's in the bucket of consequential damages, as well as the fact that they're disclaimed. Let's move on to talk about indemnity. And the first provision we have is a very pro-customer example. You note that this is got the usual indemnify, defend, and hold harmless. That is boilerplate that we will recommend taking a hard look at during this presentation. It's not limited to third-party claims. It applies even if the customer was contributorily negligent. It has nothing to do with the process. How should the indemnity work? So this is a very dangerous supplier indemnity. Good for the customer, bad for the supplier. It covers a whole lot of liability that the supplier probably would say is unintended. So Natalie, why don't you take us through some of the things to be worried about in an indemnity?
Sure. As with drafting all contract provisions, the thing that we want to stress to you to keep in mind, and Tim's comments on the hold harmless provision get at this, sometimes we throw in broad language to contracts without really thinking about what are going to be the ramifications of that. And it's helpful to come back to sort of contracts 101 and think it's always about the intent of the parties as expressed by the words in the agreement. So if you use really broad language without thinking about what it means, it will have far-reaching consequences that you might not be anticipating when you draft that language. So as a word of caution, we like to say, let's think about all of the different kinds of language we're using. So in the indemnity context, it's important to segregate in your mind the concepts that come with indemnity that all of us tend to throw together in one bucket when it's really a few different things. And that's what we're trying to get you to think about with this slide. So first, there is a duty to defend. A duty to defend under agreement is separate than a duty to indemnify. And it's also separate from a hold harmless provision. And so we just want to call attention that sometimes there's duty to defend language that is thrown into agreements and folks aren't really thinking about what that means. It's not the same thing as indemnity. It arises when an obligation or a claim is triggered. And the duty to defend can mean anything from actually putting the bill for the defense. It can mean controlling the defense. It can mean just you can hire your own counsel, but we'll reimburse you and advance you your fees. And so really, it doesn't depend on the nature of the proceedings, but puts a hook on the indemnitor to provide the defense of the litigation in some way, shape, or form. Duty of reimbursement or advancement of fees is sort of tied to the duty to defend. And in a minute, we'll get to kind of thinking through those things. And then separate from those things, you have a duty to indemnify. So you don't necessarily have to have both of those things encompassed in your agreement. Maybe you are willing to indemnify if you're the indemnitor, but you're not willing to defend. So think through those things. The duty to defend arises. It's a duty to defend against loss that occurs. So instead of arising right when the claim is triggered that might trigger the duty to defend, the duty to indemnify, like the duty to defend, the duty to indemnify doesn't actually trigger until the loss occurs, such as in the case of a judgment or some other adverse ruling. And the thing that, again, you want to be careful not to conflate with duty to indemnify, and this gets at the provision Tim highlighted before, is a hold harmless provision, which has been interpreted to be much, much broader than a duty to indemnify. And there, it's not just a specific loss that has occurred, but you might be bringing into play any potential liability, including liability not asserted against you from third parties. So you need to be really careful about using broad language like that if you don't want to be on the hook for sort of far-reaching liability. And the point of all of this is to be very clear and specific in the intent. And particularly when it comes to the duty to indemnify, courts like to see it very clear and expressed in the agreements. So again, be clear, be express, be specific. If you are going to offer the duty to defend litigation, explain what that means in your agreement. Does that mean that you want to hire counsel for the party and you want to completely control the defense? Or does that mean that you're just willing to advance and reimburse fees and the party can hire who they want? So think through those things as opposed to just throwing in language we're going to defend. Otherwise, you might have disagreements if something like that arises. Think through whether there's potentially, in multi-party contracts, sometimes there's potentially more than one indemnitor. And so you have to think through how that will work and whether both more than one party is on the hook. And sometimes you have what I'll call downstream parties that you may be willing to indemnify as part of an indemnitor obligation. So think through that as well and whether you need to make that clear. Also think through what claims are you trying to indemnify or are you willing to indemnify? Or if you're the indemnity, what claims you want indemnified? Because you can be very specific in this. And a lot of times people just put indemnity very broadly, but you can actually be very precise in what you want indemnified.